The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Greg Talks number 6. I'm still going with Greg Talks. At some point, it may change to something else. But for all of you that aren't sure, this is a podcast companion to the Brothers Wisp with really just my thoughts for the week. And it's a very informal mix of technical and non-technical material. So if that's not your bag, I won't hold it against you if you cut out. Today we have Nick Braulio with us.
Hey, hey.
All right, did I say it right that time, Braulio?
You said it right.
Nailed it, bud. It only took me like 8 to 10 tries, somewhere in the neighborhood.
No, you got it. You got it faster than people that I've known for 20 years. So let's say it right.
Excellent, man. Let's jump in. Let's see what the thing is. I know you've got a hard stop, so let's get it out there. I was thinking, you know, I was kind of musing over the fact that I have a handful of friends, and really I'm just talking about like in general, I only have a handful of friends, but some of them I've noticed it's interesting because I can leave, not see them for 2 years, and then as soon as we see each other, we pick right back up where we left off. I wonder if that's a unique experience, or do you have that with some other people?
Oh, absolutely. I have that with a core group of friends that I've known forever, like most of my formative years, one of which is probably my oldest friend. But there's a core group of us that we all skated together, you know, starting at probably age 12. And we're still, most of us live close enough that we can see each other if we really want to. But like even then, even without that, there, you know, there's one guy that lives in California, right, which is pretty far from me because I live in Illinois. But we've got a text message thread that's been going on, gosh, probably a decade. And it's all, it's like, you know, we're sitting in the same room. And my wife has the same thing with a couple of her friends. You know, it doesn't matter how long it is. They get back together and it's like they just saw each other a couple of days before. I think that's rare. But I also think that it's something that if you have it, you should recognize that it's special.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The handful of people I have that with, I have come to the realization that I consider them more family than friends. You know what I mean? They're not quite friends because they're closer than that. And I still hate them a little bit, so they probably are family. Just the idea that, you know, it doesn't matter how much time or space divides us. There's some invisible common bond that kind of pulls us together, and just, I don't know, you know, you get together and you're comfortable. There's just an absolute comfort associated with it. I love it. I've only found it with a handful of people, but it's so nice whenever I get to see
it. Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't think it works with a large group of people. I think you have you've got things that overlap, you know, personality traits or shared experiences or whatever. And, you know, I have groups of friends that, like, I've known professionally that I consider also friends that I have that same sort of thing with, but it's in a different way. Like, there's no shared history of, like, childhood in there. So I think the further back it goes, at least for me, the deeper it is. But, like, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've been in the same industry for quite some time. And I have people that I only see like once a year at a conference, and it just picks right back up like it was the year before.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, just pretty much conferences. There's a handful of dudes I see. You know what's so funny is the first time I actually talked to you was the first time I actually talked to you. You know, we sat down on the and recorded the five tips or whatever it was at the time, and you are just so easygoing, so transparent. There was just an instant comfort. I guess is more the word I'm looking for with you. And I'm willing to bet a lot of people get that with you. Although you are a fairly scary dude, I've come to find out. But there's definitely an easygoing nature about you. So I can, you know, and it seems like most of the people I tend to really establish friendships with, they're just the most easygoing folks out there.
I found through trial and error that, you know, I had a serious case of angry youth, and no good comes from being a jackass.
Oh, it takes so much energy, right?
It does. It's exhausting to be angry and to be, even contrarian. I mean, I don't mind being contrarian sometimes, but like even just being standoffish and stuff, it's just like, why? Like, it's just, it's hard. Like, you have to make an effort to do that when it's much easier just the way my brain works. And it took me a long time to really focus this, because my brain has always thought this way, but it's never really, it's only in the last probably 15 years or so that this concept has moved from ideas to like sociological interactions. Is, you know, don't ask why, ask why not.
Yeah.
And I try to do that with people now too, because I mean, you'll get a lot further in life that way. I think having kids really sort of did that for me, you know, because I saw attributes, and even they even, you know, I saw things in myself that I did not want them to repeat.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I've always believed that you're going to screw your kids up in one way or the other, right? So you shouldn't worry too much about it, but definitely if there's, I think everybody does it too. Like, there was traits from their parents they didn't like, or there's traits in themselves that they have, and they don't want to pass that stuff on, right? You know, they want the next generation to at least have a little less baggage. You know, maybe if it's only just the tiniest bit less, but just a little bit less. And something you said there just a second ago really rings true with me. And then the why not thing, you know, so I've been looking at, it's one of my lowest forms of comedy, I think, in my opinion. And that's where you come up with stuff on the spot. You know, what's that called?
Improv
comedy. There it is. And so I've been looking at that because I hear it makes you better at public speaking, thinking on your feet and stuff like that. And so I ran into some guy did a TED talk on it or whatever. And, you know, I was just looking to glean some tips. But something he said is that it can actually positively impact your relationships, because in improv, you have just a couple of jobs, right? My job as your partner in improv is to make you look like you are a genius. So anything you say, that's the smartest thing I've ever heard, and I'm on board with it. And just the idea of, so I'm going to 100% support you no matter what you say. And then to go along with that, the concept of yes and, right? So anything you say, I say, yeah, and then I'm going to build upon it. And so just the idea that, you know, if you have somebody that is positive and will take whatever you have and build upon it. I mean, not to say if I say, you know, I'm going to go smoke crack, you're not going to say that's probably a bad idea, right? But when I, you know, right. if I have something that seems positive, you encourage me and help me build upon it. I think that's such an amazing way to be, you know, just to be positive about stuff, just to have a positive outlook. The people around you feel that, and they feed off of that. It's just, just the tiniest things like that can make such a big difference.
Yeah, your life will be better. And I only take exception to one thing that you said there, and that is that you said smoke crack, but you're in Texas, so I guarantee it's meth instead.
Oh, dude. This is like, I'm not going to say it's a meth capital, but we got a lot of meth down here, so for sure.
Yeah. Crack's, sadly, Illinois is crack's not so that different.
Passe.
Outside of Chicago, it's meth town.
I thought you guys were more opioids up there.
Well, so my hometown is pretty bad in that space, but we're like, well, I don't live there anymore, but my hometown is a small, you know, 10,000 people farm town that's a bedroom community for four larger cities. So Champaign-Urbana, where the University of Illinois is, where I live, is east. Springfield, which is the capital, is west. Bloomington-Normal is north. That's where, you know, State Farm and Illinois State University, there's a bunch of stuff there. And then Decatur is south, and that's where it's a very industrial town. Staley's and Firestone and ADM are there. And my hometown is smack in the middle of all four of those. So it's kind of a bedroom community for all these bigger cities that are, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes away. And it's got some pretty serious problems right now. I do not go back there to do anything except for get pizza at my favorite pizza place and see my mom and dad.
That sucks, man.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it'll run its cycle and hopefully come out of it.
Yeah.
Like other big chunks of the country right now, it's pretty nuts.
Yep. Hopefully on the upswing.
All right.
That's a bummer. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, for sure. So I keep doing more and more stuff in the iOS XR, and I'm not sure how much exposure you've had to it. I know you're like a big Juniper guy and all this stuff. But the more I have to do in it, the more I fall in love with it. So I had to do some rate limiting on an interface, mm-hmm. you know, just some simple policing. And it was as simple as creating a policy maps, create a policy map, and then you basically say police, you say a number, and then after that you say bits per second or kilobits per second or megabit or gigabit. It's so easy. You don't have to do math anymore. You used to have to like take like 1024 and then multiply it by and then create all of these, you know. But now you just say 2 gigabits, done. You yep. apply it in and out. Oh, man, it's making life so much
easier. Yeah, I like XR. You know, I don't really differentiate. I've had to work on so many different things at this point that anymore now I'm thinking about APIs rather than anything else. Hmm. Because, you know, such a diverse set of things that I touch in my, you know, in my life that I'm getting old and I can't keep all of them in my head anymore. So I'm thinking like, how can I abstract those things away? I do like the ability to do things like, transactional, commands. So not a real time, like I'm so on like a Brocade or a traditional iOS or what's that thing that Mike likes that no one else does?
Extreme stuff.
Yeah, that's it. you know, it's transactional. At least on the old, I haven't touched any of the new extreme stuff. It could be great.
I spun like up a VM the other day, and it wasn't too bad. I mean, it's just it's different enough to be annoying. Right? That's all.
It's Linux based, and I think, you know, but I like the ability to do things, and then they don't take effect the minute I hit enter.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, the first time you ever, gosh, 20 years ago, 23 years ago, whenever it was, when I cut my arm off in the middle of a snowstorm by mistyping a rate limit ACL on an iOS box, I had, you know, probably a handful of beers. I was working at an internet provider, and I had to do that, and it was a snowstorm. My wife was in vet school. I had to wake her up to drive me in a blizzard over to this apartment complex so I could reboot the router. She didn't have out-of-band access. She was pissed. That's when I learned the reboot in command.
Yeah.
Like right after that.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's a heavy hammer. But, like, the ability to do things and then not have them take effect until I want them to, and then to even roll them back.
Yeah.
Like, automatically. Yeah. Router OS even has this. Like, Router OS has actually got a pretty sweet way of handling it.
I don't know.
I like that.
They do and they don't. Router OS, if you lose connection for, you know, like 10 seconds, then it rolls everything back. Wherein, you know, like sometimes you make a change and it needs 30 seconds or whatever. So it's pretty good for the most part. But like iOS and Junos, you could say commit, and if I don't respond in, you know, a couple of minutes, well, then go ahead and roll it back, which I really like being able to kind of have that variance in how long it waits sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's only iOS XR, right?
Yeah.
Like normal iOS, you can't do that.
Yeah, I still have some cat stuff. It's like a 6500 chassis that you have to do a reload in on. And if that joker has to reboot, you're going to be sitting there for 10 minutes.
At least 10 minutes.
In a sweat. I mean, you are sweating when that thing takes it. You know what I mean? It's like, it be up by now? It's like, oh my God.
Many, many times I've been in that situation. So you're talking like, not CatOS, right? You're talking like iOS.
No, I'm talking about like a Cat 6500 or something.
Okay, God, I was hoping to God you still weren't running a CatOS.
No, nobody. I don't have anything. Well, I mean, I have stuff that's old enough to be capable of doing that, but no, it's not regular iOS.
Oh. Yeah, I remember doing we pushed out a fiber to the home network when I was still at University of Illinois, and it got mandated that I had to have this one feature that I could only do in. I needed microflow policing. Someone thought we needed microflow policing. We never ended up using it because it was cumbersome to make work at scale. But I ended up with Catalyst 6500s. This was 7 or 8 years ago with the Soup 2TXL. At the time, it was like the brand new supervisor for it. Like I was running beta code for a while. It was so new. Yeah,
I think those are still the newest supervisors those chassis have.
I mean, I would expect that box is like 25 years old.
I know, dude. But it's insane.
I mean, it's a good box.
It's but old. I remember the boxes are older than some of the employees I have.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, it's pretty banana.
So I was getting ready to leave. I was going to go take the job that I have now. And so I was teaching the two guys that we had hired, like, here's the upgrade process. Because, you know, when you do an in-service software upgrade on most platforms, you got a 50-50 chance it's going to work or not. And, you know, I've only found a few platforms that actually consistently do that well. And so I was showing them, I'm like, I'm assuming out of these two boxes that we upgrade, one's going to work and one's going to fail, right? Because just law and ratio is going to, well, I'll be surprised if they both work. So I did it. And part of the process was verify out-of-band access. Well, on one of the boxes, someone didn't set it up right, so I didn't have it. I'm like, we got this window. It took us a month to get this window. We're doing it anyway. And so we went ahead, and I prefaced it by saying, look, don't do what I do. Like, assume that we have out-of-band access. If you come to this point and you don't have it, don't go any further. So I did it. 15 minutes later, we're still waiting for that box to come back. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pack up. I'm going to drive over, you know, it's a 10-minute, 15-minute drive to the node where that is. And I'm on the phone with these guys because we didn't have any conferencing. Everybody was at home. And, like, as I'm, like, walking out the back door, this guy, Ben, is like, hey, it's back. And I was like, what? Yeah. He's like, yep, it's back. And so I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah. So I walk back up to my office and get in. Sure enough, it just took that long to come back.
Ugh.
It's probably 17 minutes.
Those things are a nightmare. Well, I mean, I've done simple configuration changes that, like, I was manipulating the TCAM table entries, right, where you throw more IPv4 routes at the expense of IPv6 before, and you reboot those, and we had only one device that only had one supervisor, and of course, that one crashed and wouldn't come back up. I was like, God damn it.
Oh, God.
So then you're going up there, and then you're, like, swapping to the backup chassis, and you're doing all the, oh, my God. Yeah, I remember that was fun.
Yeah. that's a bad evening.
Best laid plans.
Not a great time.
Yeah.
It's always the one that isn't redundant. Oh, so I had a fun one this morning, actually. So I have a saying that I mostly stole it from Kevin Myers, IP architects guy. It's always MTU, unless it's DNS. Right? The problem is always MTU, and then a long pause, unless it's DNS. So that's largely true in my experience, right? Most of these difficult problems always end up being one of those two things. And so yesterday in my office, we have, it's an OpenFlow-based network, right? So all of the ports are OpenFlow controlled, and, you know, there's two redundant controllers. It's kind of like a distributed chassis with, you know, a dedicated control plane network and stuff. And we had a power outage. Now, we've got big batteries in this office, right? We can get 3 hours of work time, like, with no power, as long as our internet connection stays up. Our batteries actually outlast the fiber providers that have gear in this building, as we found yesterday. So we're running out. We're like, okay, we're going to have to power stuff down, right? Let's just cleanly power down things before we leave, because they're going to be working on this for a while. So they took one leg down, and then they took another one down. You know how that gets. And so we just shut everything off. Get back in this morning, and all kinds of stuff's not working right.
Of course.
And I'm like, why is wireless is working, but that's not working, and, you know, what the hell's going on? So we start looking at it, and it comes down to basically the switch that most of our desktops are plugged into was the first one that we added. So anyway, that one wasn't working right. Like, it couldn't get to the OpenFlow controller. So I'm getting in the controller. I'm looking at both of them. I'm looking. I don't see no activity, no MAC addresses learned, nothing. And so I'm like, okay, that's messed up. And so I go and I get on the console, because we've got out of band for everything here. I get on the console and I look at it. I'm like, oh, okay, so we're not getting DHCP and we can't resolve DNS, even on stuff that's not on that switch. So there's something going on there. So what it ended up being is the OpenFlow controllers were configured as host names instead of IP addresses. But to resolve them, the resolver on that switch was pointed at a switch that wasn't on the control plane network, that sat on the switch that it was actually trying to program. So we had a race condition. As soon as I changed the DNS server, it just worked. And everything came back up. But it took us 90 minutes to figure that out.
Yeah, of course. God, what a pain in the butt. It's always the tiniest little thing. And that's, man, I hate systems where, you know, it's like operationally dependent on how they come up and all that stuff. And so painful.
Yeah, we actively try to avoid that. That was probably me doing a bad job of making the configs consistent. Because with OpenFlow, basically, you program the... You know, you set a password on the switch, you set the controllers, and then on certain models, you basically tell the ports that they're open flow or not. And you never touch the devices again.
Nice.
You never get on the console. You never log back into them. You make all the changes on the controllers. And so that got set up and never touched probably 18 months ago. Never has had a problem because it's never been touched and we've never lost power. So it's I definitely try to avoid those kind of situations. But yeah, that one's almost certainly on me for half-assing it.
I don't mind taking the blame for stuff. It was my fault, Nick. Don't worry about it. It was me, bud.
No, I'll eat crow on that one.
Stuff happens. Yeah, I mean, especially too, like if it was the first one you were configuring the network, you were figuring stuff out, testing here and there. I totally get that. I do that kind of stuff semi-regularly. And I sometimes even remember to go back and make it right. Not terribly often, but yeah. I usually do. Oh, man. Let's keep trucking on. So the other day I was watching a show and somebody was talking about, so they posed the question, you know, it's like, I hear you've been, you know, you haven't been doing well with feedback on like social media or something like that. And they were just talking about how like they'll go and do the show and, they'll do a meet and greet afterwards and, 100 people will come up and 99 will say how much they loved it and everything like that. And they said, then one person will say, I just thought it was okay. And they said, the only thing they remember is that one person that just said it was okay. Right. It's like all the praise goes away. And the only thing they remember is, you know, the negativity. And something they were saying is, I thought this was kind of a brilliant way to phrase it. They said, your successes aren't just yours. They said, it's also due to everybody that's ever helped you in your life, everybody that supports you, everybody on your team. It's like when you succeed, it's because of all those people. Right. And so is it, if there's like one hater out there that's decrying the work you did, is it fair to all those other people to feel shitty about it? It's like, no, it's not, because all these other people have put in so much into you. So, you know, you've got to just ignore that stuff and keep pushing forward, you know, knowing that the work you're doing is good. And, you know, especially with anything in art, man, I know you're much more artistic than most people probably anticipate, but, in art, you can't tell people how to enjoy the art you make, right? They're going to enjoy it however they want. And I guess as long as most people find something positive in it, you're going to feel good about it, right? And hopefully you can keep moving in that direction.
I struggle with this because, so this is going to sound like self-aggrandizing, but like I don't have, like I've always been a fuck up or a freak.
Yeah.
So like I've never cared what if people like my stuff. They like, and a lot of this is, you know, based on the way my parents sort of raised me. My mom was very artistic, and you know, like it just like there's always gonna be somebody that doesn't like what you're doing, and that's fine. Like they can live forever or die this second, and it's not gonna make any difference whatsoever to, you know, the quality or how you feel about your stuff. With my own artwork, I hate all my own stuff, with very few exceptions, right? That's just how I am. But I know that, like, somebody might like it, right? If one person likes it, my own stuff, I'm totally okay with that. If 100 people don't like it, then that's fine, too, and I feel the same way about myself. Like, I'm an acquired taste, right? Many people have told me that. Like, I can be over the top and I can, you know, be a little much sometimes. And I know that about myself. And some people are not going to like that. And some people are going to say, oh, it's okay. You know, I've never really had that because, you know, growing up as a punk skateboarder in the middle of a corn town, like I was always an outcast anyway.
Yeah. You know what? There's this, I can't remember her name, but she's a female comedian, Canadian born, lives over the UK now. But she did a comedy special that I watched. And towards the end, she was talking about how some people from high school that she had gone back to her hometown, and somebody from high school said, you know, you're not normal, right? And she said that she looked at him and said, honey, you're not normal. You're ordinary. And I thought, oh, snap, because I have never fit in. I've never been like anybody else. And I never wanted to be, and I couldn't figure out why. It's because they're all boring as hell. And
exactly.
I never want to
be. I love that.
Anything. I would choose death over being ordinary. So
I love that. I've never heard that before, but I love it.
Dude, it's my mantra now. It's like I don't want to be like you. I don't want to fit into the mold. I don't want to be another sheep, you know, in line at the slaughterhouse. I just it's not for me.
Nope.
But also,
well, you live in a college town too, right?
Yes.
I mean, so like you kind of it lends itself well to that type of personality. That's one of the reasons we stayed here.
This is extremely conservative college town though, so we've got a lot of lemmings here.
I don't have that here.
There is some.
They call this the Berkeley of the Midwest.
Well, so. I mean, it still does attract a lot of unique people, which I think is good. But you know what you were saying, that a lot of people may not like you. I think you're looking at it the wrong way. I think you're very opinionated, and opinions are interesting. Nobody wants to hear facts. People want to hear your thoughts on things, and you definitely have thoughts on things, and you definitely convey them to other people. I think that's what makes you interesting. And that's, you know what I mean? It's like, if you don't have, it's that whole, if you don't stand for anything, you know, you're going to fall for anything thing. And I don't know, if you don't believe in something, if you don't have an opinion on something, you know, if you can't tell me where you want to eat dinner tonight, then I'm probably going to get annoyed with you. You know, you needed an opinion about tell me.
I will take that as a compliment. I actually like that. And I think you have a very similar attribute that way as well.
I think I'm, I don't know. You're kind of, like a steel gauntlet with a thin glove over the top of it. I think I'm like 8 layers of gloves. So I tend to try.
Yeah,
and
you're a lot
soften,
more subtle than I am.
I try and soften and mold and manipulate people into my thinking. I'm more cult leader. You're more enforcer, I think.
Well, you are down there by Waco.
I was born in Waco. Did you not know that?
Oh well, there you go. That's true. Anyways. I think I'll take that.
Yeah, there you go. But it's true. I think a lot of people, you know, if they have strong opinions, you have strong opinions, but you're open to new input, which makes it okay. If you have strong opinions and you have zero interest in what anybody else has to say, I got no time for you. But if you have a strong opinion, but you gather new information, you take in new facts, and if you see something that's counter to what you believe, you actually change your opinion. To me, that's kind of like the definition of scientist, right? Because they do research. If they find something that changes what they held before, then they change their beliefs. And there's a lot of people.
Yeah, I make no assumptions that anything is 100% factual, right?
Right.
I'm going to assume that I'm going to be wrong 70% of the time. And, you know, a long time ago, someone told me about, because I used to get frustrated with what I consider to be Luddites in my professional life. They don't want to change. They don't want to learn anything new or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. And a colleague of mine said, you know what? What happened to the dinosaurs? Right, they didn't adapt and they died, and eventually the same thing will happen. But at the same time, while they're around, they clear the foliage, right, and they keep the pests down. So, like, there's a use for everybody, right? Everybody's got their own set of skills, and you may not be, you may not be okay with like risk taking and being. Whatever, like change for the sake of change, or even just change because you need to change. You know, people maybe have a hard time with that, and that's totally okay because there's a place for that. Like, if I ran the world, it'd probably be on fire, right? Because I'd be like, hey, there's a squirrel, you know? And people like that need someone standing next to them that's going, wait a minute, what about these details, right? And you go,
sure.
I do need a parachute. I'm jumping out of an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. It takes all kinds of personality types and skill sets. It's so hard for me to get down with people that have really deeply, and I get it, right? It's the backfire effect. Sometimes when you believe something, you know, down to your core and somebody challenges your worldview, that it engages the part of your brain that actually is responsible for fight or flight. So that's why people can like become combative when you tell them IPv6 isn't a beta protocol, right? Because you're challenging their worldview, their whole sense of self and how they see themselves. So I get that. It's just, I don't know. Some sometimes you have to be able to stop and step back and really engage and listen to somebody else. Even if you don't agree with them, I bet you can glean something you can take away from that conversation, something positive, you know, so.
Yeah, dude, so that's actually a really good subject because I've been doing IPv6 for so long that to me, it's just another thing, right? But to someone who's never done it before, it's completely foreign. It's like speaking, you know, Chinese right. to somebody who speaks German. They're not going to get it. And you know, and I do try to ram it down people's throats, I fully admit. And a lot of that I do on purpose, just for shock value. But, like, you know, it depends on who I'm talking to, right? But, like, I've genuinely learned so many things, even in the past year. Like, because for the longest time, like I said, I've been doing it for so long, it's just another thing. Like, I don't see all the roadblocks
right.
that some people may have. Like, there's a fair amount of stuff that just doesn't do it, like, and it's things that are in critical paths. So, like, deploying an IPv6 only network is hard. It's actually very hard, especially if you have a number of different pieces of equipment. And you know, and in the WISP world, you know, the a lot of the equipment firmware isn't going to change until somebody asks for it to be changed. You know, so like. Ubiquity, for example, like you can harp all day at them and they don't care, right? And Microtik's the same way. Like they'll take it under advisement. They will never respond to you. But, and if enough people say it, it may mm-hmm. happen. But like I forget about those things sometimes because, you know, I haven't dealt with that in a while. And, you know, the stuff that I touch, typically it's a requirement. So like I assume everything has it. And so I've learned a lot about like, I can't do it because, you know, my billing system doesn't understand how to deal with. That's actually the biggest one in the WISP world is the billing and provisioning systems don't do it. Mm. Most of them.
Well, you know, I think too, I'm just as guilty of this before myself in the past is that when it's something that you've been doing for say 10 years and you know it so implicitly, you know, I mean, it is like part of your brain now, whether you want it to be or not. When you're talking to somebody who doesn't have a clue, you have the burden of knowledge, right? Wherein there's gaps in there when you're talking to somebody that you just assume everybody else knows it because you know it, you know, so intrinsically that it's just going to confuse and possibly, I mean, it's scary, right? It's going to scare them. And I think sometimes when you're talking about IPv6, to you, you could probably take an allocation and go to any WISP network and you can probably deploy it in a day. You probably, you know what I mean? Like you yourself,
yep.
If it's a relative, you know, if it's an environment where it's documented well enough and you can get to all the code, you could probably do it that fast. But to somebody who's never done it, I mean, simple things like how big do I make the allocations? You know, if there's this one-off thing over here, what do I do for that? What do I do for this? You know, and where you just know it, you know, in your core because you've been doing it so long. And
I literally have done it today. It is doable, but like you're totally right. Like there are learned things that I learned by trial and error.
Oh yeah,
and they change too. Like you know, it used to be when I learned you put a /64 on literally everything. Now that is sort of frowned upon on point to point links, right? You do /126, /127, /112. You know, there's religious debates about all that. Whatever, use whatever works for you in your environment, but like. You know, those things are learned by trial and error, and I am very guilty of exactly what you just said, talking about the things like everybody else knows them as well as I do, and sometimes I have to stop and go, okay, does that make sense? What pieces am I missing? And sometimes I don't do that frequently enough.
It's kind of weird. It's like if you're at a doctor's office and you ever happen to hear two doctors that are passing by and they need to... you know, share some critical piece of information, it is quite literally gibberish coming out of their mouths to each other. You know what I mean? You know, because they know it down to their core and they're going to relay it in 30 seconds and then they're gone and they're doing something else, right? And so it's just, I think a lot of us, once we get to some technical level, we're the same way. And so we give them that jargon and then they have a blank stare. You're like, what's wrong with you? Why are you wasting my time? No, I mean, I try and walk into every company, but even then, you know, I'll give people some steps. I'll say, well, you just do this, this, and this. And I forget that there's like, of those four steps, there's probably three in between each step that are super basic, but if you've never done it, you don't understand it. So it's just, I totally get that.
Yep. So my wife's a veterinarian, and when we go out, a lot of our friends she went to vet school with, and when we go out, the conversation will inevitably turn to vet stuff that it's another language to me. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. And there's been many times in the past where I'm the only one that isn't a vet there. So, like, I am, like, off in the corner, like, where's the centipede game? Like, I want to go play some Donkey Kong or something, you know, because I don't know what's going on. I'm, like, stranger in a strange land. It's true. It's totally true.
Yeah. I feel like that's how my wife and I do this, too. So, she's a fitness instructor. And so she's all about that life. So when we end up around her friends, that's all they want to talk about is shit from the gym. And it is, I mean, it's totally understandable. I know what's going on, but it's so mundane to me that I want to like injure myself in some way that I, you know, I just want to stab myself in the arm. Like, oh, I need to go take care of this so I can get out of there.
You guys just see how deep that squat was today?
Yeah. It's like, man, his form was way off, and I was trying to tell him, and he wasn't listening. Yeah, it's like, whatever. But I'm sure, you know, I was thinking, other side of the coin, you know, if I end up around. So she's come to a couple of moms with me before, and I know that's got to be so excruciating for her to be around.
Yeah.
Not that people are unpleasant. It's just you can't get down with that unless, you know, you're – here of that ilk, so I totally get that.
I kid you not, this is not a joke. My wife has literally asked me to tell her what I did that day at work when she can't sleep. It's happened more. We've been married 20 years, and it's happened more times than I can count. I'm not even kidding.
That's hilarious. You know, it's funny you say that. I used to not really talk about what I did at work, and my wife would ask me about it, and then she was like, how come you never really? I was like, because it's so boring. She's like, I don't really, it's not necessarily the technical details of what you're doing. I just want to hear about what you're doing. You know what I mean? It's like, just get an idea. So I totally get that. And I try and reciprocate and ask her stuff about the gym. Just so long as she doesn't get into too tight a detail, I'm okay. I can hang in there. But I think, you know what I mean? It's like, it's interesting, especially with your partner, you know, just to kind of know what's going on in their world. And so whenever you hear them shaking their fist at the heavens about somebody, you kind of have some context about what's going on there. I think that's kind of stuff's important.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man. So okay. You're an exercise dude. And so I was thinking about it. I've been doing a lot of like public speaking-ish sort of things lately. And I found like during the day when I'm working, I'll try and like carve out some time to do whatever that presentation is. And I have a hell of time focusing because I've got so many things going on. I know I've got all these other projects and I just can't do it. And then after work, I really want to like shut my brain down for a little while and not do that stuff. And I found the very best time for me to do that is when I'm in cycle class. So I have my earplugs in. I can still kind of hear the music, mostly hear the music. She turns it up way loud. My wife teaches the cycle class. So we're in there doing that. And I find myself drifting away writing my public speaking stuff in there, and then as soon as we get out, I try and hurriedly make notes about the stuff that I came up with. But it's so weird how in there, that's like the only time, I don't know, I haven't been able to be successful at it anywhere else except for in cycle class in the last like 3 months. Of it's just something about the exercise where everything else goes away and I just concentrate on that, and I don't know, man, somehow everything just comes to me so much easier. I guess there's fewer distractions, maybe. I used to run, and I would listen to audiobooks and stuff like that. And so I really would just turn everything off in the world and just listen to that. Maybe it's kind of a holdover from there. When do you do most of your thinking?
So I've been trying the last couple months to, I do a couple things other than exercise, although one comes, I like to try to just sort of have, I don't want to call it meditating, although that is what it is.
Right.
I do a little bit of that, try to do at least 10 minutes of that, maybe 15 if I'm lucky, every morning to just kind of quiet down my, because I wake up in the morning, I got the kids going, and it's just hectic because, you know, I got two boys and they're always picking at each other. And so
yeah.
I come home and I have a little bit of coffee, and then I just kind of do that for 15 minutes, and then my brain is quieted at that point, and then I'll exercise. So rowing machine is kind of my jam lately. and I do a lot of thinking on that. And honestly, I do a lot of thinking in the shower because I think it's the sound of the water, because I also catch myself doing focused thinking when I'm sitting by the fish tank in the basement. I grew up and I had a fish tank in my bedroom. And so that is a very relaxing sound to me. And I think once I can focus on that, then I can better come up with ideas and things like that. Sometimes I'll go in the basement to draw just so I can sit next to the fish tank, and it just sort of spawns creativity. But I find that the shower also sort of does that, although I'm not typically in there that long, but it does start that process. And I will often hurriedly get out or get done, you know, with the whatever I'm doing by the fish tank or whatever, and go write down my ideas. I sleep with a sketchbook. That's just a habit I've had for years, because you have that point when you're sort of asleep but not really, and I get a lot of crazy ideas during that period of time that I can actually recall, and so I'll wake up and scribble them down in my sketchbook, and sometimes they're totally incoherent, but you know, 1 out of 100 times there's a gem in there.
I wake up a lot. Like if I've got something I'm working on, I'll wake up and I'll be practicing that speech like in my sleep. It's weird. And then I can't turn my brain off. I'll go through a few lines or whatever, and then I'll eventually be able to go back to sleep. But when you were talking about the shower, like since I work from home most of the time now, I'm not in the car that much, so I don't get to listen to podcasts as much as I used to. So now when I go to the bathroom to, you know, brush my teeth, shave, and take a shower, I start listening to a podcast in there. So I guess I don't have that kind of like that blackout time period there anymore, because I got so much crap to catch up on, man. I just can't keep up anymore. The commute used to really help me with that.
I don't really have a commute. I mean, I work remotely, but I have an office. It's a small town, so like I can ride my bicycle here in 15 minutes. So I don't really have that focus either, and I've mostly sort of given up on trying to keep up with everything. Like I listen to a couple of different podcasts. Like this morning I was listening to the latest Brothers Wisp, actually. It was just you and Thomas. And then yesterday I think I was listening to Network Collective with Kevin Myers was talking on there. And then I'll go a couple days without listening to anything. You know, I'm listening to music or something. But I used to get just like sort of obsessively looking at the podcast list and then like getting anxiety, like, right. Oh, I have all these on, you know, I need to make time up to do this, but like, do I really need to make time? I'm air quoting. You can't see me. Do I need to do it? No, I'd like to do it, but I've been trying to refocus my brain around what I need to do and what I want to do, because that has gotten conflated. Yeah. And I think a lot of highly technical people that want to keep up and are hungry, that's a problem, right? And that's how burnout happens.
Ugh, yeah. You know, lately, I just had a lot going on lately, and a lot of anxiety and stuff like that. Just, you know, like worries, and, you know, I live my life through worry and stuff like that. You just kind of bounce from one thing to the next, and lately, I've just been listening to entertainment podcasts because it, I don't know, man, it soothes me. You know, it takes my mind off stuff a little while. So I've been listening to a lot of comedy stuff, and I honestly haven't listened to a technical one for a little while. And while I was feeling guilty for a minute, like you said, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm missing out on details and stuff. I don't know, just the mental health benefit of laughing has far outweighed it. So I don't worry myself about it anymore. You know, when I catch up on this thing or that thing, then I'll get in there and I'll spend a little time with it. And if not, the world's going to keep turning, the sun's going to keep going up, and everything will be all right, I guess. Yep. So.
Yeah, I get that way too. Like I do, I listen to some art podcasts, like Photoshop stuff. And, you know, I frequent some, I have an RSS reader. I know that's probably considered old school, but like, that's how I keep track of things. I put stuff in there and then I can go find it whenever I want in all one place. And I'll look at some of those. I'll just skim over the headlines, right? And if it's not something I'm interested in, you know, the market is red, move on. But I think it's real important to have that sort of disconnect between what you're doing all day and the mental health benefits of laughing. You hit the nail on the head there, man. That's crazy important. Like, do something to entertain yourself that's for you, that isn't related to like the next thing you want in your career or whatever, right? Take time for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, cause, I don't know. I almost moved through the world via humor. It was like, I had a conversation with my youngest the other day and I was like, well, why didn't you just tell me this or whatever? He goes, because you'll make a joke out of it. And I go, I laugh at everything. I was like, that's my defense mechanism. When I'm at a funeral, I'm making jokes. You know, it's like when I'm talking to anybody, I just live my life through humor. It's such a part of my life. And, I love to laugh. I don't know. It's just, you know, but I think like too, at like funerals, humor is almost like a pressure relief valve. You know what I mean? Yep. It's like, you've got all these emotions built up and what are you going to do with them? You know, they're just going to explode if you don't have some kind of catharsis. And for me, it's always been humor. As bizarre as it sounds, my favorite part of a funeral, I know that you're not supposed to, I don't know a better way of wording that, but at like, not the day of the funeral, but it's traditionally in the ones I've gone to is like the day before, I guess when you're having the viewing or whatever, it's mostly just friends and family standing around telling stories of crazy crap yep. that this person did or got into or the shenanigans. And that's what really sticks with me, because you remember that person through humor, through joy, through happiness. And
yep.
That's how I want to remember people. That's how I want people to remember me. You know, maybe I helped and maybe I did some dumb stuff. You know, the two are okay. You know, I'm all right with that. I don't want them to remember me as a dude in a box going in the ground. So I don't know. I've always kind of looked through that lens at everything. But with my kid, I said, basically, all right, if it's serious time, you just look at me and put your hand up and say, hey, this is serious time. We're not joking on it. You know, it's like, you gotta give me some visual indication, because I almost don't know how to turn it off otherwise, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I have that problem too. And it's funny that you said that, you know, laughing, because when I was listening to the podcast, you were laughing at it. I'm like, man, I should like do an audio grab of his laugh and send it to him to give to his wife as like a text message or a ringtone.
Don't trust me. She hears me laughing a lot. We get down. If you ever, you know, so
you have a very distinct laugh.
Oh, dude, she calls it like the donkey's bray. When I really get going, it is exceptionally annoying and loud. I fully understand the impact of that laugh.
What would be the best to me is if we could somehow backdoor Hammett's PC and change every window sound to your laugh and then lock him out of administrative so he can't change it back.
Well, he's so busy it would take him 8 months to actually get in there and fix it, so it would probably be worth it. Oh my god,
definitely will be.
All right, man. Well,
I'm hoping I'll see him at Shine On.
Oh yeah, that's coming up pretty soon. All right, so we're bumping up against your hard limit, so let's go ahead and stick a fork in it. One, right here at the end, how would you like, well, one is plug Shine On, because you're actually going to do a presentation, but then along with that, how would you like people to get a hold of you?
Well, I mean, I submitted a talk. It hasn't been accepted yet, but if it does get accepted and people want to come to it, ShineOg is the Chicago Network Operators Group. It's local-ish for me. And the talk that I submitted was deploying a national IPv6 only network for managing, a big science network, and all the things that go along with that. So that would be fun if they accept it.
Yeah, that'd be a baller.
If people want to get a hold of me, I've got a blog. It's just forwardingclaim.net, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm on the Brothers with Slack, and you can just look hard enough. You don't really have to look that hard. You can find me around.
And when you're looking up Nick Braulio, it's not spelled the way it sounds. So
that's true.
Yeah, B-U-R-A-G-L-I-O.
I changed my Twitter handle from my last name, which it had been since like 2005 or something, whenever Twitter became a thing.
Way back in the way back. I never did get on Twitter. I mean, I have a Twitter account. Mm-hmm. I just never use it for anything. I think I just kind of slightly missed the window for that, and then it was just too late, and I said, forget it.
mostly a trash fire, not too much.
All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of me, it's Greg at gregsoul.com. Gregsoul.com. I occasionally blog. I'm actually, I'm going to be pumping out some more stuff soon. So it's probably going to be more around Ansible and automation and stuff like that, because I'm doing my MUM presentation. I'm building all this stuff up, and I'm just going to go ahead and start releasing it out as I do it, instead of waiting at the last minute and then having all this stuff I got to put out, which is going to be a pain in the butt. If I do a little at a time, it won't be so bad. But also, if you want to sponsor us, patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Throw us a couple of bones. We'll give you a login to the patron-only Slack. A lot of great discourse. You can get smart guys like Nick here, who get all fired up, hot and bothered and lathery and spicy, as well as extremely helpful. So it's a lot of fun.
Lathery.
I always think of a horse. You know, they get all nasty. Kind of worked up. But questions and comments, please keep them coming. Nick, again, thank you for popping in here and doing the thing. And we'll talk to you next time, guys.
So sit back and start learning. Cool. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying. But we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven. We'll be right back.